everybody, Kendra the Vet Tech here, and today we're here chatting about another career path as a credentialed veterinary technician. And with me today is Sue. Sue is an LVT VTS EVN, so a licensed veterinary technician specialist in equine veterinary nursing. So thank you so much for joining us today, Sue. Would you like to tell us a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, thanks for having me, Kendra. This is super exciting. A little about myself. I'm kind of a hodgepodge. various things along the way. Yeah, my title is a little confusing to some, and soon I'm going to be adding a BS on top of that, so that'll be even more confusing. But
congratulations!
Yeah, this year, gosh, I don't even know where to start.
Okay, well, maybe I think we're going to talk about you quite a lot throughout the episode, because I'd like to use your experience and your track and kind of what got you to where you are today. So maybe we'll just go ahead and get started here. And Sue is our first VTS guest. So we've alluded to those credentials in several episodes up to this point. And she's also a really prominent member of the equine veterinary technician industry. So before I embarrass myself too much further by going fangirl about how excited I am to have such a prominent equine vet tech with me today, we'll just go ahead and start, Sue, with just a broad sweep of your career and experience that has kind of led you to where you are today, the position you're in today.
Yeah, I'm originally from Canada and I went to school there. I went to university for a year, got completely lost, moved to Europe like a crazy person that stressed out my parents to no end, came back and then worked in a shoe store while I decided that I wanted to be a veterinary technician.
That's a new path, a shoe store. I haven't heard that one before.
Yeah, I just didn't know what I was doing. So I worked in a shoe store while there was a waiting list to get into school. It takes an average of 2 years there to get into the veterinary program, veterinary technician program.
Oh, wow.
So it really makes you think about whether you want to do that or not. And you work on some, you know, volunteering and things like that beforehand to get in as well. So I started and I did a degree in animal health technology, which is a term that Canadians were using at the time. And now they've changed everybody over to veterinary technician, which matches the US and just makes it a little easier for people to understand. So from school, one of my externships that I did was in a mixed practice, and I really liked that. And so I actually took a job at that mixed practice for 2 years, I guess, around 2 years.
Yeah. You don't have to remember exact numbers on my podcast. Yeah. Vague is fine.
Yeah, and we definitely won't use any specific years. So I worked in mixed practice for a couple of years. I really enjoyed mixed practice, but the particular area I was living in didn't really fit my kind of social needs, per se. I was already over the hill compared to most in the area. So I decided, and at the time I had some friends that were moving to the US, and I decided to just go for it. They were kind of moving their horses and their show business and stuff away. And I decided to just go for it. So again, stressed my parents out by moving to a different country.
Well, at least you're on the same continent this time though.
Yeah. Yeah. That didn't seem to make them any happier, but proud of me in like a super scary way. So yeah. So I moved to the States. And I started work. I worked in a small animal and exotic bird practice after that. And I worked there for 5 years. Little different. My boss told me, if you're good with horses, you'll be good with birds because they're all flighty. There's still nothing like holding an African gray as it bleeds red tears to let you know that you're a little stressed.
And oh my gosh.
Or trying to catch a macaw out of a set of laundry baskets tied together as they're chewing their way out too.
Wow.
Crazy. So that was good. And during that time, I just really enjoyed having horses in my personal life and showing. And I have an American saddlebred person. So I bred my mare and I had a foal and I did all these wonderful things. And then the practice was being sold. I actually, at some point, probably about 2 years into that practice, I started doing some management personnel stuff and eventually grew into the practice manager there. And so when the owner decided she was going to sell, it just seemed like a good time to kind of reevaluate where I was at. I actually took a bit of time and I was teaching actually part-time at that point at a local vet tech college. And I actually took an entire semester of just teaching full-time, which was kind of fun. I was like, hey, this is kind of fun. Not having like a total 9-to-5, you know, having a little bit of autonomy in the job was really interesting. And then an amazing opportunity came up. A friend of mine actually found the job posting. I didn't even know what I was looking for. And she found this job posting at the University of Minnesota for a rehab technician. So I was like, this is so cool. I'm applying for this. But it was already a filled position. But the manager said to me, you know, I actually have an opening for a supervisor. And at the time I thought, I wasn't really interested in going back into HR. It was a bit of a traumatic experience for me in private practice. But as I kind of looked into it a little bit more, you know, there's just in academia, it's a love or hate relationship, right? So it's the private practice. You have to learn about the things that you're willing to live with. And, you know, there's a lot of rules and regulations and hierarchy and stuff like that. But what I really wanted to get away from was having one boss that just randomly makes different decisions and changes the rules every day.
Yeah.
And academia definitely offered that because there's no room for people just making unilateral decisions. Unfortunately, it also means that you have lots of meetings to come to consensus. But it was something that I was, that made it very different. And there's just, you can't just fire someone. You can't just make people cry, you know? So I jumped in on it and I went into being a supervisor at the University of Minnesota, a large animal hospital. And at the time we were building an equine center, which was amazing. Like I stood on that ground before there were walls. And to this day, to like 11, 12 years later, I drive up to that building and I like think, how cool is it that I work at this place? It's an amazing facility. Of course, because we're in Minnesota, we kind of they coined the phrase the Mayo Clinic for horses. So, a little goofy, but I'm like, that's just because we're in Minnesota that you said that.
Yeah. But that's neat though that you've literally seen it go from the ground up. That's a really unique and cool experience to have under your belt.
Yeah. So 10 years as a supervisor in that department. And then I was ready for another break from HR.
Yeah.
You kind of eventually start to see like things become cyclical. Like, oh, I've seen this personality before. I know where this is going to go. And, you know, like it's not necessarily a bad thing, but I guess I was just stagnant and needing something fresh in my life. I felt like I had kind of gotten to a point where like I wasn't really developing and learning anymore. And I guess that's what I was really missing. So at the time, we coincidentally were installing a Hallmark MRI into the facility and kind of upgrading parts of the facility. And so with that, we were bringing in a position of an MRI technician and, you know, to learn on the job. So again, I just jumped for that. And a little weird sometimes to kind of like step down in the same department that you've been in. But my coworkers were really great about it. They got me a cake that says, you're not the boss of me anymore. And, you know, for the most part, they really accepted me as a coworker. And I think that says something about my leadership, my time during leadership with them is that we didn't always agree, but we could still get along. So I spent 3 years working doing MRI and advanced imaging, and then another opportunity arose. And I guess I'm just a yes-sayer. I just go for it when something just seems intriguing. I was enjoying my time as an MRI technician, but backing up the hospital as you age gets a little harder, you know, getting up in the middle of the night to do emergencies and jogging horses all day and stuff. And I just knew that wasn't going to be a long-term fit for me physically. So
yeah, what we do is very physical, just in the general sense.
Yep. You know, even just holding a fold down for an hour while it's having a bunch of procedures is like really uncomfortable. As I'm getting into like year 20 of my vet tech career, which I took my time to get there. So I looked for a new opportunity had again opened itself up in front of me, and just so grateful and blessed for the path that's just led me to where I am. So I took a position as a manager of the teaching herd of horses for the university for the teaching program. So I moved over to the teaching side, which I always did teaching in, all my years at the university, I always did teaching. And really, if you think about it, like everyone does teaching in small animal, I did teaching because we'd hire someone who didn't know anything and then you teach them, right?
Yeah.
It's just, at that point, you're not described as a teacher, or an instructor in any way. So I guess I just made it more official. All my years as a technician, I've always taught people. And it's really fun when they want to learn and they're engaged. Not as fun when they don't, but in the teaching department, we're working with vet students who are so excited to be away from their desks, touching real animals, and are excited to learn things. And so it just was another like resurgence and a refreshment on, on my career, which has been really exciting. So I've been doing that for a year and a half now as like the herd manager and part of the tech teaching team that the University of Minnesota has developed.
And, I really appreciate you sharing your path kind of from start to finish here, because I think that is a really great representation of, people get into this track and they feel like they have to pick this one specific path right now, and you better pick a good one because we can't change later. But what gives us fulfillment, our sense of fulfillment, is always changing. Humans are always changing, always evolving. Things that give us fulfillment change. And that's okay, guys. And that's why I wanted Sue to share her entire path. I mean, she did exotics for a few years, for crying out loud, from horses. So you can do whatever you want. Try it. Say yes. Take the job. Make the change. If it doesn't work out, it doesn't work out. That's not
Just
the right
pivot.
Path.
Pivot and keep going.
Exactly. So I think that's a great message just to get started out on, that it's okay to try something different. And so let's talk about how your typical day looks now, Sue. So you're manager of the teaching herd at the University of Minnesota.
Yep.
Doing instruction for labs for DVM candidates. So what exactly does this mean? Are you teaching a couple classes a day? And what specifically are you teaching these students?
Yeah, so the teaching ebbs and flows a little bit. So summertime is pretty quiet because we really only have our senior students, and they definitely do teaching opportunities, but it's a quieter time. It's a good time to do some other things to work with the herd. But then come fall, all of a sudden things blow up again, and then they get quiet around the holidays. Every time there's a holiday, it's quiet. So it's not an every day is different. And that is the thing that I actually have seeked out in every position that I've had, is that every day is different. And I think that's when I was in small animal, I struggled a little bit more with it. Spay neuter dental. But
yes,
there were other benefits to it that, the exotics threw in a loop. We saw lots of emergencies. And so it didn't feel regular, but it's something I've been cognizant of every time I've chosen a new position, is it going to be the same thing every day? And bless those who do it, right? Doing the same thing day in and day out. There's some wonderful things to the regularity, but for me personally, it's like every day is a little bit different, and I love that. So some days I'm teaching students, and that means that I am selecting the horses that need to participate in the lab. That's the first part. I have a herd of 12 right now, and their personalities don't allow them to do all of the different things necessarily.
Okay? Yeah, that was a question that popped into my mind is, just working in practice, we have some horses that are extremely needle shy, and some you just can't do certain things with certain horses over and over and over again. So I was wondering how that plays in, which it sounds like you know them.
Yeah. And honestly, like of the herd that I inherited a geriatric herd, and I'm challenged with fixing that. So that part's been hard, but there are some horses. I have one horse that she's, I guess, 26 now, and she's been there since she was four.
Wow.
Maybe even three. I don't know. She's been there like 20 years, and she's herd bound.
Yeah.
Never heard. She does great work, though. It's just that you have to pick the things that are she's going to succeed in, right? Like, so, you know, I don't put her in certain labs. I don't put her in a stall where she's going to want to run over the students and leave because she's not with her herd. But I'm going to put her in a lab where they're all hanging out in the arena just side by side and they can see each other. And she does great that way. So it takes time to dig down into their behaviors and figure out where they're going to succeed and where they're going to fail, because otherwise they get kind of a bad rap by, you know, the rest of the people that have to use them.
Yeah.
And it makes a bad experience for the students. I want the students to have a good experience too. So the first thing I do is pick the horses, depending on what it is, and depending on how long the lab is, rotating the horses so that they don't get tired of doing like 4 hours of physical exams. I get tired of it and they get tired of it too. So
yeah.
You know, there's logistical things that I have to consider. In terms of what I teach, I would say the number one thing I teach is physical exam, but that is everywhere from first years trying to figure out a TPR and trying to find a heart of a horse, which I know it's gigantic, but it's just not that easy.
It's true. Sometimes. It's true.
You know, and like, raising a vein. Oh, you have to actually press. Like, I know you'd squish a dog if you did this, but this is how you're going to do it in a horse.
And, yeah.
You know, and so there's a lot of behavior involved in that, working with the horses, a lot of handling and safety as well. There's no job that's too small, which I think is really important. And they're so excited. Like, they're fresh and new. And so physical exam. But then physical exam continues on every year. I do physical exam with second years and they're learning some additional skills. Then I do physical exams with third years and they're learning even more because they are about to go on clinics and they are about to be in charge of a patient that they're going to have to do a physical exam on every day. And stuff's getting real there, you know?
Yeah.
So we spend a lot of time, like all the years of working on the clinical floor really kick in because sometimes the students are just curious and have questions. But other times it's like, we need to talk about why are we trying to find digital pulses? It's not part of a vaccination exam, but if you were monitoring a post-op colic, you need to know the right place and what it means to have different levels of digital pulses. We can really take a lot. So the physical exam, it sounds like one thing, but it's so much more.
Yeah.
Like I said, handling safety, basic injections, like they might be doing a rectal palpation lab, but they also, you know, the horses will be sedated for that procedure. And so walking them through successfully doing injections on horses. We have just this past week, the senior students that were on rotation were doing vaccinations and Coggins. So it's a basic skill, but here's someone who's never done it before. What we do in the college too is that like there are certain skills that first years, everybody in the class is going to learn how to halter a horse, how to walk a horse, how to work with them safely. But they really need to start tracking before we get into some of the more advanced things, the sports medicine, where we're putting like just a few weeks ago, we had one of my horses trained to lunge well, and we put a diagnostic endoscope on the horse. And, you know, the students were able to see how the airway was changing when that horse was working. So,
cool.
You know, again, I have to pick the right horse and, you know, it's a whole different level. We're putting telemetry on the horse, watching its EKG, all sorts of fun stuff like that. I've, you know, definitely done some other cardiology labs, trach washes, abdominocentesis. The skills are wide. It's just that as we get into the finer tuned skills, we really get more fine tuned students. Students that are specifically like tracking.
Yeah, to do equine medicine. Yeah.
Exactly. And it eases the load on the horses. They're not having like, you know, really invasive procedures. Like,
yeah.
So And like I said, I've had a horse that's been there, multiple horses that have been there for like some 20 years. We love these horses. They have a good life. They actually spent all last summer, thanks to COVID. One of the good things about COVID, one of the research projects was canceled and my horses got to eat pasture grass all
summer. Oh, they got a real summer vacation.
Yeah, they usually get some grass here and there, but like they got to go out most days. They were
so insane. Cool. Well, yeah. And you've mentioned, you know, caring for them and sort of on an ownership type level, right? It sounds like you really know them really well. We're making sure that they're not overused. What about your involvement in, you mentioned Coggins and vaccines and stuff. So are you in charge of making sure that their yearly preventative care gets done, that their diets are adjusted appropriately for body condition score? What's your involvement in that part of their life?
Yep, all of that. So the nice thing is that like I work with a ton of super smart people. So, like,
that's the best way to work.
Yeah. Anytime something comes up, I'm like, ring, ring, knock, knock. You know, if you don't answer your phone, I know where your office is. So. But and this is the first time they've had a veterinary technician in this role. So it's been an interesting learning curve for both of us. And so the preventative care program is designed by our internists that work there, our equine internists, board certified, like they've got it all. You know, the nutrition, I work with one of our ambulatory doctors that does a lot of that. And so like okay. I have resources for all these things and everything is outlined, but then it's my job to oversee it, right? Like the internist said, you need to have these horses vaccinated for rabies every January, but they don't just wake up and go, it's January. It's me going, it's time for this. I need somebody to do this, you know? And then what we do is instead of me just going and vaccinating them all, and them all holding a grudge on me later, I initiate it. And then we have students come out and do their physicals, do an annual physical on them, do their vaccines, pull their Coggins and learn from that opportunity. So we, you know, we pace it out and we time it according to what students are there and what they need to learn. But it's me that oversees to make sure that preventative care is happening. I definitely am managing the weight of a bunch of these aging horses.
Yeah.
And seasons, because I'm in the Midwest, so we have 100 degrees heat and minus 20 sometimes winter. And
yeah,
that's a challenge. So how much they eat and what they need varies season to season a little bit too, in order to keep them in a good weight, which has been a challenge for me. Like I never had managed. I could easily tell someone your horse is overweight. You need to have to watch your own. You're like, okay. And they're a little bit like my babies. I'm way too attached to them, but you know, managing their farrier care as well. Again, horses, I have a bunch of like navicular cases that the difference with those horses is them getting their annual coffin injections on time.
Yeah.
And them having their resets in a timely manner so that, you know, some of the horses can go 8 weeks or more for farrier reset, but I have others that it's 6 weeks or we're into uncomfortableness. And it's small things like just walking out and looking at them.
You know,
and paying attention to what these small signals are, standing with one front foot just a little in front of the other every day. That horse is starting to feel something and I need to address that. Things that a lot of people, you know, regular horse owners might not necessarily notice. Not that some of them won't, but.
But they don't have the medical experience to back it up and look for those little things. So yeah,
it's a lot of observation. Like, I was working with a coworker, an assistant. I have an assistant that does a lot of the cleaning. I also though pick up a shovel and do cleaning every week. So it's all glorious. I have to move snow. We have a general contract that comes in to do like one sweep of it, and then the gates are still covered in snow and stuff like that. So I have to, you know, snow plow and clean out sheds and stuff like that. That's definitely all a part of it. But, you know, like I said, there's other things like just while you're out cleaning, you can use your skills to notice things like those horses are acting kind of funny. And it turns out like their water trough wasn't working properly. And then an hour I had that resolved.
Yeah. So that's an interesting part of your is you are, it sounds like, playing sort of the part of the owner in this scenario, making sure they get their farriery done, watching their behaviors, make sure they're not uncomfortable, vaccines are being done, all these things that usually an owner would fill in this role, right? And making sure that all gets coordinated and taken care of. So that's great. Yep. I'm glad to hear that they're so well taken care of. That's awesome.
Yeah, we love them. And then enrichment is another huge part of their life. And so that's something I do when we're not doing labs. You know, if their only job was people show up and do things, that would not be a fun life. And there are definitely, iacook is a big part of our life because there are limits on how much you can do, how many times they can be sedated in a week, how many times they can have this or that. Yeah. And so my role is also to oversee all of the records of those horses and make sure that we are passing inspections with flying colors, making sure that the feed is labeled as to what date it came and what bed day it was opened. You know, there's so many little things, making sure that cobwebs aren't everywhere and cleaning and stuff like that. But it really is kind of a whole gamut of things to watch out for.
Well, it sounds like it's great for you, always wanting something different every day. This sounds perfect. You have a lot of balls in the air, lots of things going on, lots of stuff to keep track of. And what about, it sounds like you don't have time to do any clinical work anymore. So just doing this position now, do you miss doing the clinical work, the traditional clinical work?
Yes, I do a little bit. I get my heart races when, like, I'm still like in the same building basically as the hospital. So, you know, I might be going to run a load of laundry and see some colic, or, you know, I just get excited. I'm like, oh, what's its lactate? Tell me what its lactate is. I just want to know, you know.
Gotta get a little hit of that clinical medicine.
You know, but you know, like, just again, like last week, one of my mares was cross-matched for a castration gone bad that was a bleeder. And, you know, over she went. She donated blood and, you know, helped this little yearling out. So I still have some crossover, and it's definitely like the thrilling emergencies are hard. You know, oh, it's a urinary stone in a mare. How are you going to get it out? Can I see it? You know, those things, I guess I still get a little bit of exposure to it. It does make me sometimes sad not, you know, to think like, okay, I can't play any longer. I have to go move snow. You know, again, like, I also choose to do the best job I can with every job that I do. I have integrity for my job and pride in my job. And it's an important part of my horses being taken care of is that the snow is plowed from the gates and the students can get in to feed, you know. And then there's also things that I get that I couldn't get as a clinical technician. I mean, I would definitely spend time brushing horses and doing other things, but like the enrichment part of the life for my horses is so fun too. We have a few of the horses that are ridden. It's small things like when the water broke and I had to put in a water trough temporarily, they love that. Yeah. And now I know that next summer on a hot day, like, I'm just going to pull the water trough out and put it out there because they had an absolute blast playing in the water. And they might not if it's there every day, but there's small things that you can do to like make their life so much better, and grooming them all every week and making sure that they don't have problems, but working on their behavior when you need them to do something new.
What other enrichment stuff are you doing for them, Sue? What are some other examples? You said riding, and sounds like the water trough is a good new one that you have in your little bag of tricks there.
Yeah, I bought some fancy ball from Amazon that had like two handles on it and no one likes it.
I always see. Yeah.
I was like so disappointed. I'm like, this is fun for me. It should be fun for people too. But honestly, I have a herd of mares and I think they're insulted by it. But so we do some riding. If they're not ridden, they can still do groundwork. So, you know, just challenging them to like, oh, I want to build a bridge this coming summer, so that it's like just something small that they can work around, changing their environment, moving them into a different pen for a little while. Sometimes it's just a spark of life for them, you know?
Yeah.
And then I have students as well. I have some undergrad students that work with me. And so I work with them to work with the horses as well. and we work on different skills. Almost all, pretty much all my horses are trained to do carrot stretches. So we try to keep up some of their physical stuff, especially with the elders. And right now, because it's so it's cold, everything is snow covered and a little bit icy. So yesterday we took all the horses in pairs, two by two, into the arena just to walk and relax and roll, something they don't get to do every single day because they're kind of walking sketchy across the ice. And it gives them a refresh. I know I appreciate it.
Yeah. And
if I could go to Mexico or whatever. It's their tiny bit of Mexico, and it just shouldn't be a big deal too for them to walk into the clinic, whether it is that they have to donate blood or get a weight or something like that. It's different for them, but it's all a part of managing them too.
Yeah, making sure that their behavior's in check and their brain juices are flowing and they're able to do their job. And it sounds like too, from our previous discussion, that you're kind of on some, I think it's cutting edge stuff because I hadn't heard about it before, with new utilizations for some credentialed technicians. And you're going to start doing some interviews for DVM candidates for the university there.
Yeah, that's pretty exciting too. Moving into the teaching department and just having a little bit more autonomy with my time has opened up a whole bunch of things that I couldn't have imagined happening, and being invited to be a part of the DVM interview process is one of them. Not every university does an interview process. Some of them just have, applications and punch in all your GPA and all that sort of stuff and come up with a system. People review it. So our college does do interviews, normally in person, this time on Zoom. But still, it's even more important then to make sure that you're engaging with these people and making them comfortable from a distance is challenging. So yeah, I've been involved in that this year as well. And it's interesting. It's interesting to see the other people involved in these. Previous graduates are also involved in it. There are many, so we interview in pairs of two. So I've worked with several people who have graduated and want to continue to give back to the university, as well as they're probably going to be hiring people that we graduate. there's a win-win there for them to be invested in the area. Yeah, so it's not just veterinarians. It's not just on the veterinarians that teach to have, to be involved in this process.
And I think it's great that a credentialed veterinary technician is being considered, because we are such a large part of everyday veterinary medicine. And then you, of course, with what you're doing now at the university, being such a large part of the education of the DVMs. So I think that's fantastic that your opinion is being considered in a board like this and with this interview process.
Yep. And I wasn't the first one. There were others before me, and there, are others now. There are other people like the dean's assistant, who's been with the college for years and understands a different aspect of it. There's all sorts of different people involved, and then we have very specific questions to ask and ways to evaluate them. And they train us on making sure that we're all kind of giving people the same result and the same scores, depending on their experience and stuff. So that's been interesting just to learn that part of it.
Well, I think that about wraps us up for today. Is there anything else, Sue, that you'd like to share with us about what you're doing and your experience?
Yeah, I think the one thing that we kind of didn't touch on is, and I mentioned it real briefly before, but it's similar to this idea of doing the interviews with the candidates, but something that I think is another kind of cutting edge movement is the University of Minnesota is actually using technicians to teach more than just some little labs here and there. They've actually developed an entire tech teaching team, the TTT.
Cool.
And they're involving these technicians having a technician in the anatomy lab, instead of maybe having they basically are acting as a teaching assistant, a TA, but they have these years of clinical practice involved and, a different fresh aspect on things. So they're being involved in a lot of the clinical skills teaching you know, all the way along, not just the equine ones. So it's been exciting to be a part of that team and see how this kind of teaching of the physical skills of things can really, you know, it's really progressive, I think.
Yeah.
To be a part of.
Yeah, that's awesome. And that's really exciting. And just, you know, we have a lot of big changes, I feel like, with the veterinary technician field in the recent years. And that is just such a great addition to recognizing who we are, what we do, that we're knowledgeable, educated folks that can help out the next generation of DVMs. And I think that's just amazing what your university is doing and utilizing technicians in a whole new and different way that they're definitely up for, in a way that they're definitely up for. So I think that's awesome.
And it gives those veterinarians experience technicians even more, right?
That's awesome. Well, what about, usually, Sue, I like for my guests to leave a tip or trick at the end of the episode. So like a cool life hack or a clinical skill maybe that you don't learn in school. Do you have one for us?
I do. It's a little different. It's definitely a horsey trick. not a trick so much, but a tip, I guess. And it was a tip that was given to me during my externship before I finished school. And being a horsey gal, I took it to heart. And the veterinarian told me, never be too comfortable with horses.
Yeah.
So as somebody who's worked with horses day in and day out for, you know, the majority of my life, I think it's the best advice you can give someone, because you just never know. You never know with your own horse. You certainly don't know with someone else's horse, even though you think you can kind of get a feeling for it. I don't even want to say it out loud, but it's, that advice has served me well.
Yeah, I think that's solid advice. You know, like you said earlier, birds and horses are alike because they're both flighty. So, yep. You know, no matter not how nice they seem, yeah, that's some pretty solid advice for sure. So thank you so much for sharing that with us. That wraps us up for today, guys. Unless, Sue, you had anything else to share with us today about what you're doing and how you're just really in your little corner of the world advancing veterinary technology.
Just out there doing my thing.
All right. Well, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah. And you guys can catch me at Kendra the Vet Tech on Facebook or Instagram. You can also check out my YouTube channel for further instructional resources or my website, kendrathevettech.com. And if you have any other questions, comments, or topics that you'd like to hear about, do feel free to reach out on social media or at kendrathevettech@gmail.com. Thanks, guys.